Hi, I'm John.
Hi, I'm Olivia.
Hello, I'm Rob.
And this week, we've watched Twisted, and now we're going to argue about whether it's going to make us quit Star Trek.
I was mentioning earlier that this episode sort of just felt like watching behind the scenes of, or just behind the scenes that shouldn't have been made to the viewer, like just irrelevant events were happening. The same conversation for 30 to 45 minutes.
I don't know how we had a 45-minute sequence of people walking around the corridors. I don't know how you stretched that out for 45 minutes and then spend the most money on CGI yet.
They that was did? The biggest what, for the wiggly arm?
Yeah, the CGI effects were the most expensive. This is the most money Voyager spent on CGI effects so far in the show. For a bottle episode.
Of course.
I actually wondered, I asked the same question, you know, how can you spend so long walking around the corridors? And I decided to actually find out. And there's actually a note on Memory Alpha about it, where they say the episode was it wasn't long enough. They were missing 8 minutes or something. And so they actually had to add content. So that was the walking around the corridors a lot. And also the Doctor flirting with Sandrine. That was all basically pickups. They put that in afterwards, which to me was just astonishing. Like, you never hear that, do you, about broadcast television, that they were so underweight that they had to go and put extra footage
in it. It's not a great sign that they're doing that, like, in season two.
No. You know, well, even season one. Apparently this was, like, supposed to be season one. It was one of those episodes, like the 37s, that they held back for season two for some reason.
God. You know what this episode felt like? Yeah. You know what it felt like? Being in Bank Station.
Oh, please.
If you're not a Londoner,
acutely triggered.
Bank Station is, imagine changing trains, but instead of being able to like go up and go over platforms in a minute, you did a 10K marathon. Underground.
Yeah. A 10K.
Like deep underground.
Very false lighting. It feels like you're just
you go down and it's dark. You change. Limbo. You can't find your train. You give up and you come back up and it's now the evening. That's Bank Station. That's what it felt like. Bank Station or changing trains at Green Park, one of the two. it's an interesting choice of bad episodes. It is one of the ones that demonstrates why Voyager, how tired Voyager is so early on. I mean, did you start with Voyager or did you come to this and realize, oh, I've made a terrible mistake having watched other Star Trek?
Me, no. It was when I first got into Star Trek, I was probably about 14 and Voyager, I think, had already begun. It was maybe in season one. I remember seeing a lot of introductory material explaining who the cast is. And actually in those days, the Doctor was going to be called Doc Zimmerman. That's something I remember from the day, like seeing that, hey, there's a character in this called Doc Zimmerman. And I think Captain Kate Janeway as well is just slightly off kilter. Voyager really wasn't my entry point. No, I was watching TNG, TOS and DS9. And Voyager was kind of the hot new thing that people were talking about. But even then, people were kind of divided on it. There was like a lot of old school Trekkies didn't like Voyager. I don't know if you guys remember those days as well, when it was almost like the divisive Discovery chat that we have now, where some people are in, some people are out. It was definitely like that with Voyager as well.
Yeah, I mean,
those days.
Go away. Go away. We're not doing this. You don't remember them either.
I can't imagine a life where Voyager is the hot new thing. Like after 10 minutes of seeing episode one, season one, just pretend it's not there. Continue with DS9.
Yeah.
I'm so tired already.
Just thinking about Voyager.
It's just even the show itself feels tired by the 37.
It does. It Voyager, I mean, I do like it, I'll confess. I think My personal opinion is it's the fourth best Star Trek, but I really like TNG, TOS and DS9, you know, and the gulf between DS9 and Voyager is quite considerable. It's what you said, it's a lack of energy. It's kind of, it doesn't have the excitement and mojo of previous generations somehow. It's almost Star Trek by the numbers. It's like, hey, we're doing a space anomaly this week. Hey, we're doing a logic versus emotion thing this week, whatever it is, it's always the same recurring themes, but done in a really lackluster, slightly phoned in way. It's a bit of a shame.
It doesn't even have the like hyper camp nonsense vibes of early TNG.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
yeah.
They're not in poorly fitting jumpsuits. Data's skin doesn't change colour every week. It's as though
they've replaced all of that with Neelix. Yeah. And for them, that I can never forgive them.
Yeah, not great.
So you weren't infused with Neelix with Voyager when you started. Was that a quitting moment? Or had your earlier enjoyment of TNG and DS9 produced any other What Am I Watching?
No, there was certainly not a quitting moment before that. And I think there was enough goodwill in my little teenage body to want to sort of Fosbury flop over the line and actually carry on trying to enjoy Voyager. I think I had a wobble maybe season four of Voyager. I enjoyed all the Scorpion stuff. If I'm honest, I liked all that. But then, I don't know, too much Borg. I remember there's really lackluster aliens like the Melon. And I didn't love the Herosian, like a sort of hunter species. It's just kind of, you know, it's okay. It's watchable, but I'm not really excited by this. But I still didn't quit, guys. I still didn't quit. It was
Olivia's nodding as if she hasn't already quit Voyager. She's not seen the Herosian. She's not got that far.
Oh, my 2 years. I've at least seen it through this podcast.
Well, Message in a Bottle is probably the best Voyager, so it's a shame if you've not watched Message in a Bottle yet.
Is good. It's two homosexual holographic doctors running around a starship. It's really good. Like, imagine, it's very good. We'll get to this podcast at some point, I'm sure.
Oh, I've not seen this guy before.
Oh, yeah. So that's Tiny Ron, who plays Grand Nagus Dex's sort of valet in DS9. It's the same actor. So he's a really physically big guy. And that was actually something I thought was a neat trick with the first appearance of the Herosian was to have them being giants. They were absolutely massive. But then they just sort of forgot about that. And then boring holodeck episodes with them later in the season, they just sort of looked regular size. They sort of forgot that.
He looks adorable. You're telling me I'm not going to like this guy?
No, I think you will like this guy. Tiny Blonde, he's good. Trek Alunas, you know, I like him. But to answer your question about quitting, it's the same as so many of your other guests. It's season two of Enterprise. I'm so sorry.
Wow.
It's so shit.
I'm so sorry, Trip. I'm so sorry.
I think it's so strange. Like, I love bad episodes. This is one of the things that attracts me to your podcast, because you have a tendency to look for those quitting moments. And so that makes people talk about bad episodes. But I quite often like them, and I quite often disagree with the verdict. And I felt like I wanted to stick up for one of the crappier episodes because I kind of like them. I don't want to say guilty pleasure, because, you know, enjoy what you enjoy. But yeah, there is kind of a guilty element to this, a guilty pleasure element, I suppose. But I like some of the Enterprises. I like the actual Trip Nips episode, Unexpected. I like that one. And it's just so insane. And, you know, the aliens really feel alien. That's something I like about that episode. And I think as far as a male pregnancy story goes, it's not perfect, but it's not Junior with Arnold Schwarzenegger either.
When I feel like the main problem of Unexpected is that you shouldn't be resorting to a male pregnancy episode 4 episodes into your show.
Good point.
Like, you just shouldn't be doing it that early.
Because it's hack, and it's... Yeah, come on, really. Well, maybe that's why they did it, because there was this idea of we're bringing back the TOS days, you know? They sort of kind of winked at that with Seven of Nine's sort of cat suit and stuff, like, hey, we're bringing back the classic vibes. And then honestly, I was there for it. I remember all of this stuff.
It wasn't so great, crazy. Was it? You know, I mean, say what you want about TOS, but it didn't have adult 2-year-olds at birthdays.
Please, because I really didn't know this was going to be a Neelix jealous boyfriend episode. I was distraught. To be honest,
I'd forgotten that detail. I'm really sorry.
It's not as bad as the next episode. Like, I finished this. The next one is Elogium, which we will have to do, because that's the one where Neelix and Tom have to look after a baby reptile.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, of course.
We'll get to it, Olivia. You can't escape it.
I really feel like Voyager has drained my energy. Like, the 5 seconds into this, Neelix is telling Kes, "You don't look a day over one or something."
I know,
like,
it's so creepy.
Christ.
So they're having Kes's birthday in the holodeck, in the holodeck's Aloha Low program. I don't know what it's actually called, but I just call it the Aloha Low program.
Me too. We call it the Aloha Low deck, but it is called Sandrines. It's called Shea Sandrines. And I was thinking how much better the episode would be if it was actually the luau set, you know, the kind of resort Hawaii kind of set they have sometimes on the holodeck, yeah, where it's all punks
then
and
we'd
trunks.
We'd have to see Neelix in a Hawaiian shirt.
And, no, we've already input we for see enough.
You've seen Neelix's feet, unfortunately, is something you see on that set. Yeah.
But instead, we have Kes's birthday and some fake French, and, you know, there's a hole in space and they go to investigate it. So while they're doing that, Tom gives Kes a nice locket because we're still in the Tom might like Kes era.
And that's what that was.
I feel that actually complicates the jealousy thing with Neelix, because obviously we all hate the jealousy thing, full stop. But there's a bit of me thinking, he's kind of right, because that gift is too much. You can't save 2 weeks of replicator rations, you know, 2 weeks of wages to spend on a locket, like a super personal thing for someone you're not in a relationship with, you know, someone you barely know. And it's like, geez, Tom, holy crap, you've kind of, it's too much gift. It's too much gift, my friend. Too personal.
Here's the issue. Why didn't he save up his rations? Okay. Why is he just giving her cake? Trash cake that is probably tastes terrible because people have told him he can't cook 1,000 times.
And it's a good point.
It's also like Tom spends the money, gives her the locket, and then when it's kind of clear that she doesn't really want to move further on with it, he does back off. Like, it's not like he's like, I bought you a nice thing. He's not being a dick about it. It's like, she's like, oh, thank you. But then she wants to talk to Neelix about it. And he backs off.
It's not like he put his own face in the locket. He left the options open.
Yeah.
That's right. I watched this with my partner, and she pointed out that Kes should have said, what's a photograph? That's another issue, too.
Oh, God. That would have been, yeah. I mean, Tom would have known. He's a weird 20th century kid.
Ah, true.
But yeah, so they've encountered the phenomenon and the communication breaks. And apparently they're stuck in some kind of distortion ring, which is meant to be something we understand. And then I don't know what the name of this balding guy they keep running into is, but he's just annoying. And he has an
Baxter.
Annoying Baxter. He has an accent I can't recognize, and I just find him annoying.
It was very strange how he had so much presence on this show for just a guest character. You know, it was sort of like, are we supposed to know Baxter? Is he someone we've seen before? And he has this crazy Inspector Gadget voice as well, where he's like, wow, hi, everyone. Hi, Baxter. It's sort of like, well, who is this guy? It's really strange.
It's kind of like they were trying to Miles O'Brien someone, but they didn't do it properly because they were terrible writers.
They did that already with Lieutenant Carey, though. He looks like O'Brien. He's called Carey, so he has like a...
Doesn't
you know,
he
Irish
die?
Accent.
Doesn't he have and his face taken engineer. Off? Isn't he the one who has his face taken off in Faces?
No, it isn't. I don't remember the name of the face guy. But Carey is around for quite a long time because, well, he disappears for ages, but then they bring him back briefly in like season 5 or 6 or something, just for an appearance for continuity's sake. And then I think that's the last we see of him.
After being gone for several seasons?
It's ridiculous.
He went back to his home planet.
Like you said, Lieutenant Carey was the Poochie of Voyager.
There's so many. I mean, Kes is technically the worst. Ah, oh, dear.
You mentioned we got to the phenom moment. And somebody, I wrote down a line of dialogue that I liked. I think it was Torres. And she said, where is here? And it just struck me as such an original series sounding moment. Where is here? You know, I don't know whether to just laugh or cringe with embarrassment, or if I'm honest, this comes down to my love of bad episodes. It kind of makes the hairs go up a little bit. Where is here? Like, it's so camp, it comes through some sort of singularity.
I mean, the problem is it's not delivered camply. It's just, where is here? There's no Jim Kirk facade to it.
You could imagine the music playing. You could imagine that weird zoom in onto Kirk's face, but they don't do it. They should have done a little homage. It would have been great.
I mean, but it's also the weird bit of this episode is that they have this sequence which is like, oh, we're going to try and find our way around the ship. We can't get to anywhere. And then they regroup in the LOLO tavern. But it's 2 acts. It's half the fucking episode is them getting lost and coming back. Like, you could have done it in 1 act. TNG would have done it in 1 act. DS9 would have done it in 1/2 act.
There's not much
to it. Notes, it's just complaints about the timestamps. It's like 20 minutes of this now, 10 minutes. Like, just, oh, God.
It's like, There's like a 10-minute sequence that basically consists of Neelix being jealous, Neelix saying he's no longer going to be jealous, Neelix then demeaning Kez and saying she can't do anything properly.
Hey, they give you diversity there. They give you jealous Neelix, they give you infantilizing Neelix, they're giving you all the Neelixes. They give so
jealous Neelix, infantilizing Neelix, negging Neelix. It's a big three.
Like, all the faces of Neelix.
It's like, how do you know so much about Hargrove? Or when do you know all these rooms? It's like, sometimes you just remember things.
Gosh. Yeah, that was awful. Although I did wonder if that was the introduction of... there's a couple of names, isn't there? Is it Ayella and Nicoletti?
Yeah.
Those names always stick in my memory, and they come up again and again whenever they're listing off crew members. Ayella and Nicoletti are always in there. I always think, will we ever get like a wonderful spin-off of Ayella and Nicoletti?
No, these largely unseen characters. Because they are the only characters' names they remembered. And then, you know what actually gets me? Why are there no signs on this ship? Like it's not like... Like, if you go on an actual warship, there are big signs saying, like, mess this way, bridge, gun number one, gun number... It's like, there's big signs so people know where they're going.
That's true. Even on the Enterprise, they have it on the Enterprise D, don't they? There's, like, a digital readout where you can hit it up and Majel Barrett will tell you, you know, next left, Botanic Gardens, or whatever, you know.
And on, like, the refit of the original Enterprise, there's lots of... Because I know the production redesign they did, then they have all those signs. Why are there no signs?
Well, that should be, that's it. That's the name of the episode right there. Why are there no signs?
Why? Because it's like, oh, we're walking around in circles. I don't know where I am. It's like, there's no sign. There's nothing that says deck. Nothing that says like deck 8, section 4. Like,
just I don't think we've spent so much time in corridors.
Yeah. I'm just like.
Is this the point where Harry Kim has a totally stupid suggestion about there should be a Jefferies tube that goes from here to the bridge? From the holodeck to the bridge, and they've already established that wandering around the ship is not a solution. And I think somebody suggests something sensible, like we can use tricorder data to create a schematic, which will make
the map. Chuckles is the voice of reason.
Oh, I love that you call him Chuckles. I call him Chuckles too.
That's Terry. It's Terry gave us that one.
Well, Q called him Chuckles in one episode, and it always stuck with me.
Yeah, was the only voice of reason.
Wait, did Cora say he wanted a tube from the holodeck to the bridge?
No, not Tom. Harry's like, yeah, there's a Jefferies tube that'll take us from the holodeck to the bridge, which...
That seems like a bad idea.
It was a bad idea.
It's just a really stupid thing to think of. We've already established that walking around corridors doesn't help, so why would walking around a Jefferies tube help? It makes no sense at all. You're fired, Harry.
This is why you're an ensign. That and the constant pot smoke. But
also the fact he referred earlier to a device called the accelerometer, which made me laugh. Like, it was I know Techno Babylon Star Trek has a pretty bad reputation, but this is like pretty bad, like sub Doctor Who accelerometer. What's an accelerometer? That's never come up before.
That sounds fire. That's actually great.
That's you know what is this? I don't know what an accelerometer one does, but I want to see. Tells me how
that name has TOS energy.
It does. If it wasn't TOS, though, we'd have had 55 years of bored nerds deciding what it's for. And then by Stranger Worlds, that would now be canon, which is kind of the endless cycle. But instead, we have Neelix still being terrible. And so they eventually, Torres and Tom get to engineering. And Torres tries to go and fix something and ends up in someone's quarters, and it's just a guy. And I think we're meant to laugh at this, but it's just weird.
Yeah.
Oh, he just has his shirt on.
Yeah.
He's not naked. They're not like having sex in their quarters or anything. It's just a dude with his shirt off. It's literally nothing. I think because she's into him, I think that's all it was. I think she was embarrassed at her own attraction to this topless.
But it's not even like foreshadowed, or it's just a guy.
Yeah, I didn't understand. Have we supposed to have seen their interaction before?
No.
We've never seen them flirt. Oh, no.
No, I don't think he's ever named.
Actually, we have seen them before. It's actually Garrett Wang's stand-in is who that actor is. So what I think is actually maybe what happened there is that was the fourth wall that opened up, and she just saw this guy walking around behind the scenes, and that's why she was embarrassed.
It's like that bit of the Truman Show.
Yeah.
Why? Okay. Great. He had a lovely moment.
He did.
That was the only scene on Star Trek.
You're going to need to fail that again.
Did you lose me again?
Yeah, we kind of lost you. You actually sounded remarkably like you were in a similar singularity to the episode.
Keep that in then.
Keep it in. Yeah, you know what? If anything happens, Olivia's just part of the solid space distortion port light. It's fine.
I mean,
but don't worry, because we know the way out. It's okay.
We know the way. Do we? We know the way out. We'll do absolutely nothing about it.
Gosh, it's a completely perfect, underwhelming episode. Anyway, I don't think what I said was very important, but, you know, just move on.
I mean, if there's so many weird bits, like, they all decide to split up and search for clues, and, you know, Neelix decides to go with Chakotay with his legendary tracking skills, and Chakotay looks like he's about to be ill.
You have some experience with women, right? Wink, wink.
Oh, God, that's so embarrassing.
Chakotay's experience with women. You can tell that Chakotay doesn't want to talk about it, because he knows exactly what this is about.
I think Robert Beltran was embarrassed. It was shining through.
As he should be. And there's like a little bit where Neelix is like, why is jealousy so unpleasant? Or like, it's you. You're unpleasant. You make these situations unpleasant. Your relationship is inherently unpleasant.
Stop.
Someone needs to call him out.
People have come up whenever I call Neelix a nonce and being like, oh, but he's, you know, Kes is like an adult in a company. It's like, yeah, in a company terms, she's like in her 20s, early 20s, late teens. Neelix is canonically middle-aged.
So either way, it's like a 19-year-old dating a 40-year-old.
Yeah, it's like in terms of life experience, Neelix is, they're not equals. And even if they were equals, Neelix truths are like shit.
Imagine a Neelix, Kes TikTok age gap couple account. Have you seen those?
No, I haven't seen these. Please tell me what these are. Tell me what you're talking about, Olivia.
No, like you just see these weird couples on TikTok and they're like, I'm like 19 and he's 50 and our love is real. Just the energy. I'm sorry. Like,
I can see it. Neelix and Kes doing that. I can see that happening.
Absolutely. Well, Neelix, he would run the account.
Neelix, I don't know if you guys, if you've seen any of these episodes yet, but Neelix actually gets his own YouTube channel in a later
episode. Oh god, episode. I have seen that episode. It's really bad.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We have to do it at some point, because it's just like Neelix video logs a murder mystery. It's like, what the fuck?
Is Neelix a better podcaster than us?
Don't say terrible things like that. Don't say terrible, terrible things like that.
The only thing weirder than Neelix having a YouTube channel is the fact that people seem to like it. They all talk about it. They say, hey, did you catch Neelix's show this morning? You think, what?
I mean, presumably there is literally nothing else to entertain them at this point.
They have a holodeck.
You have a point. Shall I explore the entire literature canon of humanity and of the Federation and all 100 species? Or shall I listen to Neelix talk about his cooking? Cooking it is.
A morbid fascination. Who is this guy with?
Is there lead in the water? That's the only explanation. There must be like something wrong with the replicators. They're putting lead in all the water.
It's Neelix. It's poisoning everyone, yeah.
So then they meet Tuvok and then they lose Neelix. Which is the only good part of this episode, is they lose
things are improving.
Yeah, they lost Neelix in the maze. And then Janeway gets stuck in a CGI, in a mediocre CGI effect, which is... I can't work out if Kate Mulgrew is trying too hard to sell it or doesn't care.
What is this?
When she's going to be stuck in the arm and she's like trying to get pulled out of it by Harry. I can't work out if she's trying too hard or just beyond caring.
At this point in the episode, I'm beyond caring and I cannot memorize this. And, like, I cannot think of a scene with much clarity.
That I thought was weird, just before we get to the terrible CGI moment, Janeway tells Kim something about, you were one of the bright spots in this mission, Ensign Kim. And I just thought, why is she saying that? Oh. And it's basically because, as well as just being a bit awkward and strange, I think it betrays the idea that Janeway thinks they're all going to die. Is she kind of coming to terms? Is she really thinking,
after all
the crazy things we've been through already, Twisted is the one that's going to end the show? Is she really thinking that? Because the way she says this is, I always wanted to tell you, Mr. Kim, you were one of the bright spots. And, you know, it's like, it's sort of like putting it's the last things you want to say to people. You know, it's like, hey, I'm not such a great dad, but I want to tell you I'm proud of you. It's something like that. It's the kind of thing you say when you think you're going to die, right?
Wait, but are you saying like she wasn't even like really that being truthful? She was just like, I'm going to tell him something nice because we're about to die. Because I was thinking like, well, why didn't you promote him then? You say you're impressed with him. But now I'm like, oh, She just tried to give him a little pep talk before the final moments.
Well, we know why she's not going to promote him, because he's the one who came up with the stupid idea of going in the Jeffrey's tube in the first place. And she's just almost lost it.
I can't keep defending you, Harry.
I mean, it's like, I'll be honest with you, having watched The Voyager, I have, the only characters I like are Harry and Tom, because Harry seems, they seem like the only people who seem to understand how utterly batshit everything is. Like, Harry's just like, this is mental all the time, and Tom's just like, this is mental, but I'm beyond caring. Mm-hmm. And I respect that. I like Chuckles, who there's nothing to respect there.
He has like,
poor old Chuckles. Poor old poorly drawn Chuckles.
He has no personality. I don't understand how people can be so passionate about him. He doesn't do anything.
Like, Janeway Chakotay shippers,
I
understand the concept, but then again, I also understand the concept of, like, the Tory party, so that doesn't mean I agree with you. I just
understand
the concept.
The concept of a toast sandwich, but why would I want it?
A toast sandwich? Do you mean like a sandwich where the bread is toasted, or a piece of toast on a sandwich?
No, a toast sandwich. Have you not heard of the toast sandwich? Isn't that like a British delicacy?
Toast sandwich. No, I've never 100% heard of that.
It's not a British delicacy. It's just three slices of toast in it.
No, it's bread and then toast in the middle.
Ew, no, I've never heard of that. That's not a
guys,
thing.
This is up there.
I thought all three slices of bread were toasted.
No, the toast is in the middle because it's a delicacy and you put black pepper and salt on it. Okay, this is, okay, all of you are just, I'm reporting this lack of knowledge to the home
office. 3 o'clock, I'm looking at a bottle, I'm 3 o'clock. Out of the line of the camera, there's a bottle of rum. I am.
No.
Is the toast sandwich going to take me over the line?
I'm going to get a picture of a toast sandwich just to ruin everyone's day.
But anyway, so Chuckles is the toast sandwich of Voyager, in that most people don't even know who he is.
He's a Jamie Oliver toast sandwich in the sense that nobody knows what he is. He's incredibly dull and he's pretending to be exotic.
Yeah.
Like Jamie, he's Jamie Oliver's toast. He's Jamie Oliver's Caribbean toast sandwich.
Oh, gosh.
Soft on the outside, crunchy on the inside.
Toast sandwich is a sandwich in which the filling between two slices of bread is itself a thin slice of toasted bread, which may be buttered. An 1861 recipe says to add salt and pepper to taste. You'd rather have that over noodles.
I mean, I'll be fair, the Victorians were doing a lot of cocaine, so I'm sure this was actually pretty nice to me. But so Toast Sandwich Man is now arguing with Tuvok about whether to split up and search for clues. So they do, and then they find each other again. Because apparently that's drama at this point.
I thought it was quite funny. It was weird because I think we were supposed to receive it as drama, but it felt like comic timing to me. Like when Tuvok goes and then immediately reappears through the next corner, it kind of struck, it was just funny. It just felt like comic timing, but probably wasn't intentional.
I feel like this episode would land better if it was treated as comic, if it was treated as a comedy.
Mm.
Like if this was just a farce comedy, I'd have enjoyed it.
Absolutely. It might have even been a trip-nippable episode, but it's not because it's so dead. Like, yeah. It's not even cursed. It's just boring.
Oh, what a shame. I mean, I hadn't seen Twisted for a long time and I thought this would be a good one to defend, but actually I was pretty bored by it as well. And one of the things I had in my mind about saying, so this is what, can I give you a theoretical defense that I don't really stand by, but this is something I was thinking of. This is something I was thinking of before I watched it again. It was, have you guys seen The Haunting, like the 1960 whatever version, 1963, I think, of The Haunting? The way that's directed is beautiful. And one of the things they do to make you feel sort of disorientated by this house, that the house is somehow alive, they'll pervert cinematic conventions. So, for example, normally when somebody goes off screen left, you expect them to reappear screen right in the next room. They would deliberately reverse that to give you, the viewer, this sense of disorientation. And I thought, okay, maybe they'll do that in Twisted. But if they did, first of all, they didn't really do that, not artfully anyway, because as we've just learned, these were all pickups when they were doing that kind of thing anyway. This was literally to fill time. So they didn't have that artful approach like in The Haunting. But the thing I wanted to mention as well about The Haunting is it was directed by Robert Wise, who directed Star Trek The Motion Picture. And I thought, oh, it's such a shame. Like, they were so close to having that knowledge, and they didn't use it.
Like, all the best episodes of this podcast, it could have been great, but they couldn't be fucked.
The story of our lives.
So they try and blow up the warp core to try and fix it, and then it doesn't work, and then Janeway speaking gobbledygook, and it turns out this daughter's about to swallow them. So then Tuvok says, why don't we just let it?
Yeah, how did you guys feel about that?
I respect the move, because it's like, I want this to be over, he wants this to be over, we're on the same page.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. And then it dragged on. Like, there was just 10 minutes of them being like, we're going to die, and, you know, Tom and Harry being like, am I trying to be, like, you know, trying to be brave and, you know, not being brave, and then Tess wishes she was in Neelix, and then the pan pipes playing while Chakotay contacts his fucking spirit guide.
Yeah, that spirit guide moment, he was trying to have some peace in his final moments. If that was me and someone came up to me and like, we have like 10 seconds to live, I'd be pissed off.
What you doing?
Like, I'm trying to have my personal connection in my last moments, and you want to chat? No, no.
And then
something I liked about the moment, so you've got Janeway's terrible gibberish she's coming out with. She actually says doggy doobie, which kind of interests me. But also, when you see things from her perspective and everyone else is talking gibberish from her perspective, it's the same trick is used on Frasier, the sitcom, when we're seeing things from Eddie's perspective. So Captain Janeway, she had to have Eddie vision. So on Frasier, it's like, yada, 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 Eddie, yada, 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 walkies. And that was kind of what was happening here for Kate Mulgrew.
Oh, I love that episode, because then the same episode when Martin is hearing Frasier and Niles and Daphne's boyfriend talking, it's the exact same thing.
That's it, exactly. So it was one of those moments where I thought, oh, I love Frasier. Why aren't I watching Frasier?
Why am I not watching something that isn't Voyager? Which is something that always happens when I watch Voyager. Because
this is Eddie?
Yeah, this is Eddie. Aww. Eddie's the best.
When the ring threatens to engulf them, sorry, this is related to what you were saying about Tuvok's plan to do nothing and hope for the best, because part of me was thinking, well, you know, sometimes that is true in life. Like, maybe action is the thing that causes the problem. Maybe action is something that makes things worse. It's a bit like that TNG episode where Data has the Chinese finger trap. You know, it's kind of a similar thing. So it's like, okay, I'm going to roll with this. But then it's when they think they're going to die, and Tuvok sort of tenderly puts his hand next to Captain Janeway as if to say, my friend, it's been so good serving with you. But that just betrays that he had no conviction in his own idea anyway. So really the only reason he said, let's do nothing, is because he was actually thinking, we're boned. Genuinely, like,
that's harsh. I think he had no plan. Make sure the respect was there, just in case.
I think it was nice. Like, I always saw that as a nice, tender moment between two friends. But I think this time it made me think, it betrays the fact that Tuvok doesn't know what the heck he's doing anyway.
And you know what? We have all this drama and then they're fine. And Jake was like, oh, the distortion wave was a message from another species. And you know what? I fucking flipped out.
Why?
Couldn't they have, like...
I flipped out because why didn't we find that out at the end of Act 2?
Why can't we have some filler of the actual aliens? Couldn't we have some filler of what's going on their side? I don't know.
Couldn't we have?
Oh, no. Because that would cost money, Olivia. That would be expensive.
They already spent so much money on the CGI and the wooden arm.
But also,
split the difference.
Why the distortion is a message? Why is it the episode about the message? Why are we not learning? Why is it's aliens? Why is that not the twist in Act 2? The rest of this episode is them trying to communicate with this aliens before their message destroys Voyager and kills everyone.
Yeah, good point. I mean, that's the thing with the bottle show generally, isn't it? It's like, we need to contrive a reason to have a bottle show. We need to have people walking around the sets because this week we're saving money. That's basically it. But I mean, there's classic, really good episodes that end in a similar way, like... is it called The Nth Degree, where Reg Barkley drags everyone to the center of the galaxy to meet the, that they call the Cerulean.
Is that a classic episode, though, or is that just...
it's a matter of opinion, I suppose.
Yeah, but that's interesting. Stuff happens. It's not just Reg walking around in a circle for 40 minutes, getting smarter every time.
No, you're quite right, but it's just
the issue of... He takes control of the ship and flirts with Deanna and, you know, Dwight Schultz acts...
I suppose, but it has the business of ending with the message. You know, it's ending with, hey, the adventure's actually about to begin and the viewer's not going to see it. Which is a bold move, I guess.
Like, you can get away with that when the episode's interesting, not when the whole episode feels like a build-up to the twist, which happens in the last 3 minutes.
Yeah, true. So, you guys, you didn't like it.
I was trying to understand the twist as in, like, what happens at the end? They just say, oh, we were hacked and we exchanged information. But they also gained information, right? It was like a little exchange.
Yeah.
It was just a little bit of a GDPR breach. GDPR breach is fine.
You know what it was? It was low budget Vija, is what it was.
Oh god, don't say so. At least Vija was camp. Like Vija had like the blaster beam musical instruments and musical cues and a big spirally energy thing that converted a pedophile into pure matter in the next stage of human development. And
no, I forgot about that.
This didn't even have there were no vibes. The shoes weren't attached to the trouser legs. And...
What?
In the motion picture, the uniforms, right? The trousers are the soles, the shoes are part of the jumpsuit.
I need to look at this.
Yeah, like the jumpsuits have like a sole in them, and the shoes are part of them. There's no separation.
You're saying it like that's a bad thing.
That's hot. Yeah, that could be hot.
Not for your back.
Oh my gosh, it's a onesie. It's a Primark onesie.
It's a Primark onesie. It's a beige Primark onesie. I just don't know. I don't know how you write. If I was writing this episode and at the end I wrote that twist, I'd stop and go, no, wait, this is more interesting. Go and work it back through.
You would not be submitting this, you know.
Yeah, this is
the deadline.
Like, even by bottle episode standards. Like, okay, so what other bottle, what other famous, okay, the Doomsday Machine was a bottle show.
Mm-hmm.
The Naked Time was a bottle show.
Mm-hmm.
The Drumhead was a bottle show. Lower Decks was a bottle show. Duet was a bottle show. Dr. Bashir, I presume, was a Civil Defense was a bottle show.
Classic.
Not Dr. Bashir. That was a holiday convention, wasn't it?
Yeah. Dr. Bashir, I presume, is the one where he turns out to be a Augman. You're thinking of Arman Bashir.
Oh, I am, yes. The one you mean is the one with Doc Zimmerman, isn't it? Yeah. Yes. Good
like,
point.
How is it that the Doomsday Machine, that bottle episodes can turn out Duet and the Doomsday Machine, and this is the best, this is... Threshold was not a bottle episode.
No, we go out on the shuttlecraft in Threshold.
Well, I guess it's because it includes only existing sets.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, we go to a Star Trek planet, don't we, when there are salamanders at the
end. But that's just a Planet Hell set, I think.
Oh, right, yeah.
But, like, it's... They ran out of money. That's the only real explanation. They just ran out of fucking money.
They ran out of money, and they didn't even shoot enough material went from the script. It's insane. It's truly insane. But I just wanted to point out that in Threshold, Tom Paris says, he has the line, I was everywhere. So how can it be a bottle show? You're not into that.
No, I'm still irritated about how they fumbled it.
How they fumbled Threshold or Twisted.
Yeah, this. Threshold is increasingly possibly a good episode in my view.
But trivia? Also, they always knew it was bad, is the last thing I would say about this, is they thought it was so bad, they might not even air it. This was something they were saying at conventions back
that
in...
That should have been the case.
Mm-hmm.
If your episode before all the filler was basically just nonsense anyway, and then you added like 30 more minutes of trash.
It got... The script was written by Brad and Braga. It was rewritten by Michael Piller. The director didn't understand it, and it had to be rewritten and shot. Just give up.
And didn't the original script or idea for this was season one, were you saying?
They were originally going to air season one.
They had like a year to fix it. An extra year.
And they didn't.
Well, I mean, you know what it's like to have deadlines, right? So presumably Piller and Braga, they'd had 24 episodes ordered or whatever it was, the original order for season one, and they knew they had to deliver. They had no money left. Let's face it, they had no ideas left. So they just went, okay, we're going to do this quickie bottle show. And then it came in under time as well. Actually, I was wondering about that. If this was happening today in the age of streaming media, would they have just said, oh, you've only got 37 minutes, that's fine. we'll put it out anyway.
No, they wouldn't have done it because in these days of streaming, you do 10 to 15 episodes. They're all incredibly curated and they have a lot longer to churn out a script.
Mm-hmm.
They just wouldn't have made this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. There'd be no need for it. You wouldn't have had that budgetary concern.
It's just such a paint-by-numbers episode. They've done it. It's paint-by-numbers, but you've only got two pots of paint.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both shit. Olivia, why...
I'm trying to think of something redeeming.
Is there anything nice to say? I can't think of anything.
Neelix was missing for a while, had some respite.
I forgot how good Tom and Harry look in the Voyager outfits. I don't know. Maybe I'm just bored. They look cute. But that's kind of a general Voyager.
I mean, I wanted to root for Harry, but you know.
What about the moment when Harry clearly wants to go to Kiz's party, but his shift isn't done yet? He has like 24 minutes of shift left to get through. And Tuvok's kind of toying with him. Tuvok's in the captain's chair and he's kind of not going to let him go, but he knows he's going to let him go. That's cute, right? We've all been in situations like that.
Yeah, I just...
Wait, what did he actually tell him in the end? Because
he told him to go and fix something in the holodeck.
So that was just code for fuck off, you can go to your party.
Yeah.
Cute. You can go and have the nibbles.
Cute.
Are we giving him that?
I mean, 20 minutes. You can wait 20 minutes to complete your shift, Harry. This is why they don't promote you. This is why you're still an ensign.
He's just excited. The party's happening without him. And he wants to go.
Tuvok had like a box of like the lieutenant's pins in his pocket and was waiting for Harry to say, no, sir, I'll stay on shift. And then when he goes, Tuvok's just like, well, I guess you're in the bin.
Oh.
Puts him in the bin and Harry leaves. You're right. The trivia, they didn't want to make it. The Delta Quadrant reference book rated this episode 6 out of 10. Cinema Fantastic.
I think that's fair. I'm going to say that's what I would give it to.
Cinema Fantastic rated it 1.5 out of 4 stars.
What? Okay. That sounds more like it. I mean, I'd give it 4 out of 10.
Okay. I think that's quite generous. Like, I can tell you really hate this episode. So I think 4 is pretty good.
Yeah, like, there was scenes.
I get close to liking it, and I'm only giving it a 6.
Yeah. I mean, Michael Piller said that this episode would ruin Neelix's character, which...
You wouldn't want to defame the nonce. You wouldn't want to do that.
He said he was going to be comic relief. He wasn't already?
I have something nice to say about it. The very concept of a surprise party, especially as the kind of cold open... I mean, by the way, I wouldn't like a surprise party. I think that would be horrific. It would make me very nervous and suspicious of my friends going forward. But it's the kind of little peephole onto just regular life in the future that I think Star Trek is good at, that maybe you wouldn't get on, say, Babylon 5 or, you know, BSG or something. Maybe you would on B5. But it's the kind of things like Riker playing the trombone and Data painting and talking to Geordi about his painting. It's stuff like that that's... It's so corny, and I think people who don't like Star Trek don't like that stuff. But to me, stuff about Data playing with his cat is kind of what I'm here for. Like, I like these little windows into just life in the future. And so I think the surprise party kind of goes into that bucket for me. It's kind of a nice little, hey, it's a regular thing. They still have birthdays in the future. What do you know? I'm cool with that.
I mean, BSG definitely don't have time for any parties. I mean, they're celebrating genocide. A new way of torture. You know, they're not going to get into that
stuff. Babylon 5 has an arc where Sheridan and Ivanova go on strike because the government's trying to make them move out of their nice quarters. And then there's a whole gag about them getting merchandised with, like, bears and, like, toys and, like, Barbie dolls.
Oh, yeah.
It's very much that JMS thing where he basically Naval gazes, so it just basically makes direct eye contact with the fourth wall. Which
that's funny.
Babylon 5 does get good, Olivia.
I have another nice thing. It's Mr. Heckles is in it. The actor Larry Hankin, who's a classic bat guy. He's Mr. Heckles from Friends. You know who I mean, right?
No.
Okay, he plays he's like a pool shark on the holodeck in the LOLO scenario. He's playing pool. And he's in several episodes playing the same character on this holodeck set. The character is called Gaunt Gary, but you will never hear them say that.
Gaunt Gary.
I'm afraid so. But the thing I'm putting forward as a positive is not the name Gaunt Gary. It's just the fact that Larry Hankin is in it. He's a classic bat guy. I don't know. I mean, he's such a classic that guy. He's the person I would go to describe what a that guy is. He's like the junkyard guy in Brett. He's Mr. Heckles on Friends. He's a total classic that guy. So seeing him made me very happy. That's, you don't know what people say about that.
I don't know what to say. I don't know how to react. I don't know who it is. I'm sorry. So, I mean, it's nice when Star Trek has other actors on. I just wish it did something more with them than Bull Shark in a holodeck program.
Yeah, but that's what he does. And, well, okay, a little more generally then. Let me ask you what you think about the idea of a semi-permanent holodeck set that kind of does the job of Quarks or 10 Forward or something. It's just this place they go to hang out. It's like
a smart idea. Mm-hmm.
So Vic's Lounge.
Yeah. Vic's Lounge, yeah.
It's a problem. It's a smart idea, but they don't execute it well because they don't stick to it and they don't develop it and we don't... It's a tool as opposed to a setting. It's just they're just not thinking about it very hard. I mean, that's just a long-standing problem with Voyager. They don't think about anything very hard.
I mean, I really want someone to convince me Voyager is just great. Like, I honestly don't want to be like this.
I don't enjoy it because sometimes
it
I
like 4 years.
I've not finished it. I just haven't. I've watched smatterings of it. I'd say I've watched about 2/3 of all Voyager episodes. It doesn't mean I've enjoyed them. I've just watched them.
I think I need to do your method of just going in and watching random ones.
Yeah, I've never watched a single Star Trek show from start to finish, except for Discovery, like any of the old ones, like Discovery, Picard, Lower Decks, etc. I've done in order, but all the other ones,
excuse me, you didn't watch DS9 in order?
Okay. No, I just picked random episodes and sort of made my way through that.
You're
one.
Out. You're
well,
done.
I sort of vaguely moved from the start to the finish.
Imagine watching Ducat unhinged, crazy. Like first, that's your first experience of him, and then it's back to like civil defense. He's just sort of an annoying, arrogant guy. Yeah, he was a Nazi back in the day, but then like by like season 7, he's a cult rapist.
Yeah, he goes from Colonel Klink to Ranya Heydrich. It's what he does. But I think that's the only way to watch Voyager. I mean, can we even give it a quitting? Are we quitting? Yes, yes. Clearly. Fine. Just out of utter boredom.
I wouldn't blame anyone for quitting. I'm not quitting, but I see where you're coming from.
You're not quitting. So we're going to... I mean, you seem...
So I can move on to greener pastures in Voyager. Because I still believe, I have faith. Like,
yeah, you know, you've got to see Message in a Bottle. As John was saying, Message in a Bottle is just a wonderful episode. If you don't like that, then that's it. You don't like Voyager.
Then it's over. Okay, so I have one episode to...
It's the best one. It's got to be the best one.
It is actually quite good, irritatingly.
I just see... Oh.
And how do we feel about the triplet scale? Shall I explain, Olivia, or do you want to explain?
I will... The triplet scale is really... You know what? I've come around full circle. It's a beautiful thing. You know, it's based on the Enterprise episode where Trip... becomes pregnant and grows nipples along his arm, and you know that's a traumatic event. So if you have 10 trip nips on the scale, the episode's cursed. It's bad. You hated that, kind of. If there's 0, that's the perfect amount of nipples because you only need the 2. You don't need any extras. So that's where we're at. But here's the thing: I have respect for the trip nip scale now, and I just don't think this was funny. Curse. I don't think it. Maybe 2 trip nips for I don't know. Neelix bringing out a cake that no one ever eats. I don't know.
It's just flat. I think the maximum it could really be given is 4.
Yeah,
I'm going to go 4 trip nips as well. I think for similar reasons that Olivia said, actually, like there's moments of joy, like Neelix bringing out this shitty cake that nobody wants. That sort of thing always makes me laugh on Star Trek. So I'm saying that's a moment of joy. So yeah, I'm going 4, perhaps coming at it from a different direction to you, John. But yeah, I'm going for 4 as well.
It's
beautiful. The scale has united us.
The scale has united us in its deep, deep failures. And it's just, I can understand why people see Think of Voyager because it's an interesting concept and the characters are interesting and Kate Mulgrew is very good. Tim Russ, very good. Robert Duncan McNeil has his moments. Roxanne Dawson is definitely a person with political views. But it just never...
What are the, because earlier you had mentioned what, like the episodes that people don't like, but you enjoy. And I said that my scale of what I call high art might coincide with that. So what episodes were you thinking?
Yes.
This is a lovely experiment, Olivia. Thank you. What a good idea. Okay. I'm gonna open with Spock's brain. What do you think?
Yes.
We are one.
Okay. Really? I'm gonna count the correlations. Excellent. Okay.
Perfect.
We've had 1 point for height. We've had one correlation.
Yes.
Okay. I'm gonna say threshold. Sorry to bring Voyager up again, but I'm gonna say threshold.
Yes. I can accept this one because what is it? The four is so much worse and terrifying. Threshold is kind of funny, but the four is like my actual nightmares personified and truly ruins my day.
We got two.
That's
one. Two.
That's a great review. I'm gonna say Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
I don't remember the films. I only remember Voyage Home because I rewatch it all the time, and the motion picture.
It's generally seen as the worst film, worst of all the films, perhaps except for Nemesis, but it's certainly worse than any of the other original series movies. It's the one where they meet God and Spock's brother, Cyborg, and I seem to recall a five-breasted cat lady. And
oh, no.
Yeah, so it's like what you're saying about the tripnips being a beautiful thing. I think the more tentacles an episode has, the better. Like, I just like that kind of kitschiness. So Star Trek V, when God is portrayed as a big blue head who wants to steal a starship, yes, please.
Kind of feels like a rejected Douglas Adams script, and not in a good way.
It's funny you should say that, because I believe it's a rejected or possibly stolen Harlan Ellison script. So you guys talked about City on the Edge of Forever already. That's written by Harlan Ellison. And I believe he was a very powerful brain of science fiction who they didn't really want in their stable of writers, but they brought him in for a pitching session. And one of the things he pitched was this story about meeting God. And lo and behold, it turns up as one of their movies with a big budget.
Wasn't his pitch the one where Kirk would have had a fist fight with Jesus?
Oh my goodness, I don't know. I hadn't heard
there
that one.
There is one where Kirk would have had a fist fight with Jesus. Or become Jesus. I can't remember which one.
You know what? I'm going to say that does, even though I have no memory of this film, it does correspond. Because was that five-breasted cat lady? I'm going to assume that she was a girl boss. And good for her.
Next. Yeah. That's great. I mean,
three for three.
You might regret saying that when you watch the episode.
Oh God, Jean.
No, she's fine.
I'll blame Jean. It's fine.
She's not a huge character.
You could literally blame William Shatner because he directed the film.
He did.
Oh, then it's a beautiful experience all around. I can blame Shatner, and it's all good.
It has gravity boots. That's pretty good. Yes, Spock flying around in gravity boots.
Row, row, row your boat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. What? Is that one that, wait, what? Why is he seeing that?
McCoy euthanizes his dad?
No. Yeah.
Not live, but we just find out he did.
I am having minimal regrets, but it's fine.
What's next?
It's very kitsch, Olivia. I think you'll be okay when you watch this one.
Can we get to five? We've got two more. If we can get to five correspondents of Kirk.
Okay.
I haven't heard my beautiful, perfect one yet, so we'll see.
I wonder. I mean, I want to know what that is. So I don't know if maybe you want to submit a couple from your direction, and I'll see if they match my
TNG's
lowbrow favorites.
Masks. Okay. I advocate for a Masakaverse. We should be bringing in the Masakaverse instead of the Mirrorverse, and we should get to see Corgano all the time. We should get to see the tinfoil masks out every week, and that's what we need. And John is a hater.
No, I'm on your side.
I just think that was great. Thank you. Thank you.
I don't think it's perhaps the finest script ever, but I do love all the Massacre is Waking stuff. I love seeing Spiner doing, Spiner being Spiner. That's always good. And the idea is wonderful. This idea of like the takeover, this soft, gradual
John
takeover
is
great.
Just for the record, his face is.
I'm just going to eat a gold bar.
Listen, we got to see amazing acting from Spiner. We got to see a glimpse of an aqueduct on deck six. I can't remember where it was. You know, I would like to have seen the entire Enterprise just sort of jazzed up like that. We were robbed.
Agreed. Strong agree. And what about, a lot of people don't like Q episodes, so I'm going to go for a really early campy Q episode. Oh my goodness, let me name it incorrectly. It is Hide in Q. I can't believe I'm suggesting this. This isn't right. This was a moment of panic.
Is that the one with the pig, with the Napoleonic soldiers with pig faces?
That's exactly the one I was thinking.
It's a higher. It's higher. I'm choosing for you, Olivia. It's higher. I'm choosing.
I regret bringing this one up.
It's higher. Cute dresses of Napoleonic uniform.
I have seen. I can't remember this one. I've seen. I have seen Q dressed like Data and...
Oh, yeah, that's the one. Alone.
Q's dressed like Data, Q dresses up in like a French Marshal's outfit, Riker gets god powers.
And there's a weird moment where Tasha Yar
kind of... I might have
not
seen it, you know, if it's season one of TNG. There were a few that I just...
Wesley becomes an adult. He doesn't look anything like adult Will Wheaton, but he becomes like a himbo for like 3 minutes.
Okay.
No,
jumper on.
I'm sorry, but I want to bring this one back in. I'm not going to say this episode. The episode I want to nominate for my fifth and final guilty pleasure is Justice.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Fashion icons. Well, it was a weird Aryan planet, but other than that, there were fashion icons on show. You know, men should be dressing like that. And that's a good thing.
I agree.
What was this, Tommy? Are you mad?
I think what Olivia said about the Nordic element of it is a bit unfortunate. It's almost like Code of Honor in reverse or something. It's like this unfortunate thing that kind of sort of ruins the episode. The way they dress, the way they live, the whole business about they run everywhere, they run places, they don't have vehicles. Yeah. I always thought
to
was great.
Stay hot for each other.
I don't know about you, but I'd like to live in a botanical garden, so I think that would be fine.
I feel like I'm too clumsy to live there. That's my main problem with it. I'd be dead.
Yeah.
I'd trip over something or knock a rock over and dead.
Oh, but only if you're unlucky about mediation day or whatever it's called.
Yeah, that's we should make all guests submit an episode to Olivia's high art scale, I think. I think we should. I think that's the only way to do things. But while I contemplate having to deal with that every week till the end of time, do you have anything to plug to our listeners, Rob?
Oh, well, I should briefly mention my book. I have a new book out called Stern Plastic Owl, and it's available from the comedy media production company Go Faster Stripe, or you can get it from my website at ringham.co.uk.
Excellent.
Thank you for letting me plug that. I always forget.
No, it's everybody to come on here, and if they dealt with us for an hour, they have the right to voice something onto our listeners.
Thank you very much.
After that cathartic Star Trek therapy, we all need, you know,
yeah,
something at the end of the rainbow.
And for our listeners, we can offer you at the end of the rainbow merchandise from our Tee Public store. I'm going to probably look at getting some new designs sorted. Please submit any suggestions at our Twitter at @QuitStarTrekPod or email them to us at iQuitStarTrek@gmail.com. We read the emails when our soothsay chickens say we have to. So far, they haven't pecked the right seeds yet, so we're not going to read the emails. When they do, we'll read the emails. You know how it works. You know how ancient Roman things work. That's how we check our emails. But otherwise, thank you so much, Rob, for coming on and reminding us how much we really don't like Voyager.
That's cool. It's a pleasure. A pleasure. Whenever you
not for us. We had to watch this episode.
I'll choose more wisely if we do it again. I'll choose a Voyager that might actually be enjoyable.
But until next time.
There's not even a message you can give.
Don't be
a not even a lesson.
Not even a lesson. Until next time, everyone, write good episodes of Star Trek. There you go. There you go.
Something we can all agree with.
We can all agree with. Write an episode of Star Trek. Get a draft ticket. Someone else to read it. You know? Go to sleep, come back the next day, have a look.
If the deadline is impending, just apply for that extension, okay? Just do it.
Brandon Barger will understand. He's a good guy. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.